opponents of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's re-election are using Twitter to help organize their protests. Now, President Ahmadinejad's team is trying to shut down Twitter, Facebook, and other social networking tools. Daniel Turdeman is a staff writer at CNET News. He's been following the story from the very beginning. He joins us now with the latest. And Daniel, first of all, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
That's my pleasure.
Now, let's talk a bit about the use of these social networking tools. We were talking a little bit in the last hour, sort of drawing parallels between something like 20 years ago, Tiananmen Square, versus now, and how it's so much harder to quiet the masses, as it were, because of the social networking tools. What are you finding?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Because all of this goes over different kinds of networks, you know, it's just that much harder for governments to shut everybody down. And even if they are able to shut down, you know, normal internet methods of, you know, the methods that people get internet, you know, people have satellite phones and, I mean, cell phones bring in service from other countries, and, you know, it's just there's so many ways to get the word out.
And it's even the phenomena that's going on is that it's almost a comparison to 20 years ago where China could just sort of stop all of it. This has become so ingrained in our lives, in our communities, even there in Iran, that it's almost impossible to sort of block yourself off, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I mean, given how much news has come out in this country, at least, about the way that social media is spreading the word about what's going on in Iran, it actually makes me wonder if, you know, Iran might have been better off, you know, not trying to censor the news. And I suppose it's more about trying to control the spread of news in Iran itself, but, you know, they certainly have created a monster.
That was actually my very next question. What does this portend as far as getting information out, as far as protests, whether they're pro-democracy protests or anything else? This sounds like a watershed moment.
This is the biggest of what has been sort of a growing series of moments for using social media as a way of, you know, spreading, you know, news as it happens. This obviously is a much bigger story than, say, you know, the U.S. Airways plane that landed in the Hudson or the Mumbai terror attacks. But I think that what you're saying is accurate, that, you know, from now on, we just have to assume that there's going to be almost no way that a government can stop a news event from spreading around the world on social media. In a lot of ways, governments probably, outside of situations like what's going on in Iran, probably will use this to their advantage.
Well, and even, Kate, you write in your blog post yesterday that the Twitter folks were slamming CNN for how it's sort of a lack of coverage of the Iranian situation.
Yeah, that's accurate. I mean, the protests, you know, the election was on Friday. The protests really started in earnest on Saturday, or, you know, at least, the really, really big protest started on Saturday, and it was, you know, even late Saturday or into early Sunday morning, CNN, at least on their website and on the American, network, not CNN International, but the American CNN, had barely any coverage of what was going on with the protests. And even the stories that they did have, you know, their top highlights were more about how,
Ahmadinejad.
I can't either. So we're in the same boat.
Yeah, about the victory rally that he was going to have. I mean, you know, this is a major story, these protests. I mean, you know, people, you know, hundreds of thousands of people marching in the streets of Iran is a major story, and CNN was really kind of behind the ball on that. But what we're seeing now is that, you know, all the mainstream media are going to be behind what you can see on Twitter just because of the speed of Twitter and social media.
And that's one of the watershed moments I wanted to touch on with you, if I could, and that is CNN was put in the position of the classic mainstream media, a term, by the way, I despise, but the classic media having to triangulate its information. And if you can't get information out, and if the only source you have is somebody tweeting on a social networking site, that doesn't really count as something that you can use as validated, triangulated information in the classic sense of journalism. At the other end of the spectrum, I mean, because you don't want to report rumors. That's not their job. But at the other end of the spectrum, you do have to let people know that something is happening over there. So it sort of turns how we do our jobs as reporters covering the federal government and covering what's going on out there on its ear. It turns it around.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, sourcing is definitely a question. But a network like CNN should find a way. I mean, they should either have had people on the ground in Iran or, you know, or they should, you know, have found a way. I mean, you know, particularly, I think one of the reasons this sort of goes back a little ways, you know, about the CNN's relationship to Twitter, you know, they had made such a big point about how they were in this race, turned out with, you know, the actor Ashton Kutcher to be the first, to have the first account that was going to have a million followers on Twitter. And so once the so-called Twitterverse, you know, the people, the Twitter users started complaining that CNN was kind of dropping the ball on this Iran story, you know, CNN should have picked up on that and kind of done something with it. But it was hours and hours and hours after that, you know, that meme started spreading across Twitter that they, you know, before they did anything. And I think that's one of the things that got people so riled up.
It's all fun and games until somebody protests an international election and causes an incident. And then it becomes deadly, deadly serious, which is what's happening now. Twitter is now being used as a tool for information gathering and stuff. So where could it go from here then? How could agencies, emergency responders, what can we take away from this as far as getting the word out?
I think that the thing to take away from that is that, you know, if, you know, again, focusing specifically on a service like Twitter, but more broadly also on social media, that people just need to understand that, you know, while this doesn't sort of follow, like what you're saying a little bit earlier about sort of the traditional rules of sourcing, that, you know, when you've got a lot of people on a service like that talking about something is happening right now and people should be paying attention, that, you know, you can, to a certain extent at least, assume that there's some validity in it, and at the very least use it as sort of a jumping off point to do your own research. And I think that, you know, one of the things that was interesting, I think it was yesterday that was reported, was, you know, there had been this sort of planned maintenance outage on Twitter yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of people who are upset about that, saying, you know, how can you shut Twitter down right now, you know, while this is being used as the primary method of communications about this.
Well, and how fascinating that the State Department actually reached
exactly,
out.
Exactly. That was my point. It was, yeah. That was the State Department, you know, took it upon itself to say, no, you need to keep this up. And I think that's a sort of a, you know, a sign of the government and what, you know, what we should be looking for ahead of time.